to the Heiress of Slytherin, a Harry Potter podcast. I'm Micaela, your host. Hello, welcome to episode 50. Today I'm going to be discussing chapter 10 of Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, The Marauder's Map. This is such a great episode for episode 50. I can't believe this is my 50th episode. I feel like I've done that much, or maybe more, just because I do so much prep work for this podcast. But also, like, I'm at number 50 and we're on Prisoner of Azkaban. So I wonder how many episodes it will take to cover these chapters. There's 22 chapters in Prisoner of Azkaban. So it's, oh my gosh, I'm so excited. This book is so good. And this is such a great chapter to be the 50th episode. Just because so much happens, and it, oh gosh, I love this chapter, and there's just so much to talk about and so much to get into, so I'm very excited, and I don't really have much news again. Like, I know this is a few weeks in a row now, a few episodes in a row where I don't have, like, a bunch of Wizarding World news. Like, nothing's really come up, just because I am recording these, like, in a certain amount of time, so I don't really have much news or any news at all really to discuss for today's episode. So I can just get right into letting you guys know this email for the podcast is theheiressofslytherinpodcast@gmail.com. Twitter is @SlytherinPod. Facebook page is the Heiress of Slytherin Podcast. And you can leave a voice message or donation on the Anchor link. And this podcast is available on Anchor, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Breaker, Radio Public, and Pocket Casts. And now I can get into the summary from last week's episode. So last week I discussed chapter 9 of Prisoner of Azkaban, and that's Grim Defeat. And that was another really good chapter. A lot of stuff happened. Some of the things I really spent a lot of time talking about were the iconic turn to page 394 scene and how it just proved that Snape is just not a nice guy. We already knew that, but this was one of, like, the worst times. Like, this is one of his nastiest times. And the trio is learning that Snape really strongly dislikes Lupin. Like, he hates him. We've heard him talk about Lupin badly to Lupin's class in Defense Against the Dark Arts when he substituted. He was super mean to Hermione then, too. He also had some resentment towards Dumbledore for some reason. The trio isn't really sure why, but it is because of Lupin. Sirius Black did try to break into Gryffindor Tower, so now the Gryffindor students have Sir Cadogan as their portrait hole entrance. They have the password to him, and he keeps changing it, like, multiple times a week, and it's really bad. It's hard for them to keep up, especially for Neville. And there was a Quidditch match, a brutal Quidditch match, actually. Malfoy was faking his injury from Buckbeak. He was acting like he was still injured. So Hufflepuff had to play Gryffindor in the Quidditch match instead of Slytherin. And Gryffindor is like, oh, they just didn't want to play in the weather because it was some bad, dangerous weather. Intense thunderstorms, all the lightning, pouring rain, roaring wind. It was bad. And then Harry, during the Quidditch match, he saw, after Hermione did a spell so that his glasses would repel water, he saw the Grim, that dog, at the top of the Quidditch stands in the audience. And it ended up being, that's Sirius, we know from, you know, like, this podcast, spoilers and everything. That was actually Sirius Black watching his godson Harry play Quidditch. But seeing the Grim, you know, kind of freaked Harry out a little bit, because he's seen it multiple times now. And, or that was his second time seeing it in person, but he's seen the Death Omen cover, he saw, or Professor Trelawney saw in his teacup, the Grim, like, you know, he has all of these events that keep happening, Sirius Black, like, it's getting freaky, right? And the Dementors were at the Quidditch game, at the match, on the field, and that caused Harry to faint, and it also caused him to not catch the Snitch because he was falling off of his broomstick through the air, and Cedric Diggory ended up catching it. However, Cedric, he did want a rematch because, you know, he didn't even know that Harry had fallen off his broom. However, there was no rematch. Hufflepuff did win, and Harry woke up in the hospital wing not feeling great. It was a grim defeat indeed, because he felt awful. Like, this was the first time he didn't catch the Snitch. He collapsed in front of the Dementors again, or the Dementors caused him to faint again. And also, to top off his terrible day, his Nimbus 2000 was destroyed. When he fell off his broom, the wind blew it into the Whomping Willow, which completely destroyed his broomstick beyond repair. So, Harry had a really rough chapter. That was bad. Just the broom, the match, everything, the Dementors, like, he had a really bad day. So that is kind of where we ended the chapter. He woke up in the hospital wing. His team was there except for Oliver Wood. Last episode, I talked about how Oliver Wood was being a really bad captain. And he wakes up there. Team tells him they lost and everything. And then Ron and Hermione tell him about Dumbledore saving him and shooing the Dementors away, and, you know, with his Patronus charm. They don't know it's a Patronus charm, but Hermione described a silvery thing coming out of his wand, and that's going to be important throughout this book. And they also revealed to him that his broom was destroyed, and that is where the chapter ended. And it's also where this next chapter is beginning. So I can now start my 50th episode of this podcast, There's a Slytherin, discussing chapter 10 of Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, The Marauder's Map. Harry stays in the hospital wing for the rest of the weekend. So the Quidditch match happens on Saturday morning, so he just stays the rest of Saturday and Sunday. Madame Pomfrey insists on keeping him there, and Harry's really not feeling great. He's so upset. So he just doesn't even argue the point. He just stays in hospital wing. And he also won't let her throw away the remains of his Nimbus 2000, of his broomstick. Because when Hermione, you know, gave him the remains, it was just a dozen, like, pieces of splintered wood that are damaged beyond repair. So one thing that's said in this first paragraph of the book, it says he knew he was being stupid. And I don't think he's being stupid at all. Like, he knows that his Nimbus is beyond repair, but the sentence literally is, but Harry couldn't help it. He felt as though he'd lost one of his best friends. And I don't think that's stupid at all. His broom was a magical companion to something he loved. I mean, at the Dursley's house over the summer, it was like the last two summers, it was miserable, and he would just count down the days until he was returning to Hogwarts. And one of the things that he, like, looked forward to the most was flying, was Quidditch. He loved flying on his broom. So, yeah, and I feel so bad. Harry, I don't think he's being stupid. I really don't. He's struggling because he does feel like he's lost his friend. This really was a magical companion to something he loved. So, wanting to hold on to those pieces, it's an act of, not, I wouldn't say desperation, but he wants to kind of hold on to the remains of something like his best friends. It's hard for him. And yeah, he can get another broom, and yeah, he's going to get a Firebolt, which is the best broom in the world, but he doesn't know that yet. And, like, I just feel so bad for him. Like, he is struggling, and it's just a bad weekend for Harry. And I'm telling you, it wouldn't have been so severe if his Nimbus wasn't destroyed. It would have still been bad, but this just made it like 100 times worse. It was so bad for him. I feel so bad for Harry right now. He is so sad. He has a few people visit him over the weekend, a few visitors. One of those is Hagrid. He sends Harry a bunch of earwiggy flowers that look like yellow cabbages. That's just the description of them. Ginny also comes and visits him, and she's blushing when she comes in. She gives him a homemade get well soon card, and it's like a singing card. You know, they're magic, of course, they can make really fun homemade cards, but hers is singing. Unless Harry, like, keeps it shut, he has to put a bowl of fruit from the hospital wing on top of it, because otherwise it just stays open and keeps singing. And then on Sunday morning, his team comes to visit him again. This time, Oliver comes with them, and he should have done that the day before, like on Saturday after the match, instead of going straight to the showers and waiting there and staying there, instead of checking on his teammate who just fell off his broomstick in the air. Like, I was so mad at Oliver last episode because he was being a really bad captain in a few instances, but that one in particular was the worst one. Like, go check on your teammate. He feels terrible. This is the first time he hasn't caught the snitch, and he almost had it, but it was out of his control because of the Dementors. Like, he needs to do better, and it makes me really mad that he waited until this day to do it. he owes Harry an apology, and it makes me really, really mad. But he does come to visit with the rest of the team, as he should have done the day before. But he has, and he's still upset. Oliver is still very upset. He has like a hollow, dead sort of voice. That's how his voice is described. But he does tell Harry that he doesn't blame him in the slightest. And okay, good. Like, no one blames Harry. But, and again, Harry is not someone who's like easily offended. But still, like, Oliver, you need to apologize, and you should have said this to him yesterday. Like, he was being a bad captain. You need to be there for your team. They're all upset that they lost, but no, the way he acted was not okay. I'm still so mad at him for that. And of course, Ron and Hermione visit Harry as well, but no one even is making Harry feel better. They're trying to, but you know, Harry isn't telling everybody all that's worrying him, because he has the Dementors, like, and the Grim. He didn't tell anybody about the Grim that he saw at the Quidditch match, especially not Ron and Hermione, mostly because he knew that Ron would panic because his uncle saw a Grim and died 24 hours later. And Hermione would just scoff because she doesn't like all of that, like, mumbo jumbo type open to interpretation rather than logical way of thinking with magic. So he is just now not, he didn't tell them about it. He's now had two times where he's seen the Grim in Magnolia Crescent, after he like kind of ran away from the Dursley's house, and then a second time yesterday at the Quidditch match. And both times he's saying that he had near fatal accidents. He almost died. The first time in Magnolia Crescent was the night bus that almost ran him over. And the second time, just yesterday, fell off his broomstick 50 feet and almost died. And so now he's kind of thinking to himself, okay, is the Grim gonna just haunt me until I die? Am I just gonna keep seeing it? Am I just gonna spend the rest of my life looking around for it, looking over my shoulder, being scared that it's gonna appear and then he's gonna have a near fatal accident or eventually die one of the times that it does appear? So it's, you know, of course he has every right to be worried. There's some weird stuff going on, and on top of everything, the Quidditch, the Grim, there's the Dementors. Once again, he fainted because of them. They caused him to faint and lose consciousness. He feels humiliated. He is frustrated. Every time he thinks about it, he just feels sick and humiliated and frustrated when he thinks of them. Because everyone says, yeah, the Dementors are really bad, but Harry is the only one who is fainting. So he's, and they, like, they're horrible. Everyone feels horrible around them, but Harry doesn't know why he's the only one that's losing consciousness and all this has happened. And on top of that, like, of Harry fainting and no one else fainting, no one else hears the echoes in their head of that, of the, his dying parents, because now Harry now knows who that scream belongs to, because on the train he heard the scream and no one else heard the scream. Then he heard it again, but this time he heard more of that interaction. It was his mom being killed by Voldemort. She asks him to not kill Harry, to kill her instead, you know, and Voldemort tells her to stand aside. She doesn't. She says not to kill Harry, and then Voldemort laughs as he kills her, and then his mom screams. So that is what he's hearing. He now knows whose voice that is, and it's his mom, and he knows that's Voldemort's voice. And that's terrifying. That's a really haunting sort of feeling, hearing his mom's last words, and he just hears them over and over again that whole week, and he's just lying awake at night, and that's all he can hear. So that, of course, that's enough to make anybody feel sick and horrible. And hearing the last moments of his mother's life when she was trying to protect him, and Voldemort just laughing before he murders Harry's mom, he's not having a good weekend. And especially the times when he does fall asleep, he just feels awful and replaying his mom's screams, and like he remembers the Dementors and the clamminess of them and the way they look and the coldness and the awful feeling, and he is just having these nightmares, and it's so bad. On Monday, Harry is kind of grateful to be back in the hallways with all of the noise and the bustle of everything. He's almost forced to like think of other things. Of course, Malfoy is just so happy that Harry didn't catch the snitch. This was Harry's first time failing at Quidditch. He's so happy that Gryffindor lost the game. Malfoy's just taunting him too because of the Dementors. Like, you know how Malfoy is. And he's just delighted in all of this stuff. And suddenly his arm is fine now. It's no longer hurting him. He's no longer injured. So it's a little too convenient. I don't know who Malfoy thinks he's fooling. I mean, clearly some of the teachers maybe, or the teachers just don't care enough to do something about it or call him out. I'm not sure. He's really not fooling anybody. So I don't know. He's just being really ridiculous right now. And also, like, he spends the next potions class doing Dementor imitations across the dungeon. Does he not know he looks dumb? Yeah, Crabbe and Goyle are laughing or whatever. They think it's funny. But does he not realize, like, how, like, stupid he looks and sounds doing this? He probably looks so dumb. And it just reminds me of, like, kids these days when they do weird stuff in public to, like, because they think they're being funny to their friends and, like, want attention. And everyone else is like, oh my god, kids are so annoying. I can't stand them because of kids like that. That's what Malfoy reminds me of right now. He's being such a dumb 13-year-old. It's actually so annoying. Also, something I just realized I forgot to mention about Harry feeling sick and humiliated about the Dementors and the Grim and feeling terrible about hearing his mom's death over and over in his head. He doesn't feel like he can tell his friends that. And I get, like, no one's obligated to tell your friends anything or anybody anything you don't want to say. But he just keeps it to himself. And Harry tells Ron and Hermione pretty much everything. And this is one of those instances where he just doesn't tell them this. So, you know, and I get it, like, he doesn't want Ron to panic, he doesn't want Hermione to scoff, and that's kind of on them as well. Like, your reactions, like, aren't always going to help Harry, and that's part of the reason why he doesn't want to tell you what he just experienced. So I kind of feel for Harry not feeling like he can tell Ron and Hermione, and just keeping it to himself, like, that's also weighing on him a bit. So back to Malfoy doing his Dementor impressions during his potions. So after a while, Ron just finally just has had enough. And he flings a large, slippery crocodile heart at Malfoy and hits him right in the face. And I think that's hilarious, and that's what he deserves. But Snape takes 50 points from Gryffindor because of it. And I don't know if I'd say it's worth it, but honestly, I'm glad that it hit him right in the face because someone needed to make Malfoy stop. Ron already dislikes Snape in general, but after last chapter, when Snape was substitute teaching for Lupin for Defense Against the Dark Arts and Ron defended Hermione to Snape, Snape gave Ron detention, so Ron's just even less of a Snape fan than he was before. Especially after he just took 50 points for Ron throwing the crocodile heart in Malfoy's face. So they head towards Lupin's class for Defense Against the Dark Arts. And he says that if Snape's filling in again, if he's teaching Defense Against the Dark Arts again, I'm skiving off. Like, he's just going to straight up leave. He's not going to go to class. And I wonder if Hermione would have let him. Like, she would have probably told him off, you know. But she also knows how much Snape is being frustrating right now. So I honestly think she might have just been like, okay, you shouldn't, Ron, but yeah, go ahead, you know. But he tells Hermione to check who's in there. So he says that if Snape's teaching Defense Against the Dark Arts again, I'm skiving off. Hermione, go check who's in there. So she peers around the classroom door. She's like, oh, it's okay. Don't worry. Like, Professor Lupin's back. So this is a huge relief. And I just think it's so funny he tells Hermione to check. He's like, I'm not even going to look in the classroom because if I see Snape again, it's just going to make me so mad. So I think it's so funny that he sends Hermione to go look for him. So the class is very glad that Lupin is back. And it definitely looks like Lupin has been ill. His robes that are already really shaggy and old and worn looking, they hang even looser around him than before. He has really dark shadows underneath his eyes. However, you can tell that he is happy to be there. He smiles at the class And right away, as they all take their seats and class starts, there's just an explosion of complaints about Snape's behavior while Lupin was gone and while he was ill. Like, I really like that the class feels safe with Lupin. He's created a safe space where not only they know that they're learning valuable information from him for Defense Against the Dark Arts, but he's also created a space where they feel as though they can vent to him and let them know about what they've been experiencing so far in Snape's class. Like, they know that he will listen to them. So I really do like that he has created this environment that they haven't had before. So in Defense Against the Dark Arts, at least. So I do appreciate Lupin being a beacon of hope of sorts for them. So they kind of explain a few examples of what Snape was doing. Some of the students say that it's not fair. Snape was only filling in. Why should he give us homework? Which, I mean, come on, guys. It's you're in school. It's okay if he gives you homework. Like, that's one thing. But they didn't like it was two rolls of parchment. That was long, especially for one weekend. Like, that was a lot. And Lupin, you know, he didn't know what Snape was going to do. You already know that Lupin left some notes and everything for Snape to follow for what the next lesson was for the students. However, the students tell Lupin, Snape started doing werewolves with us. And so Lupin frowns a bit and he's like, okay, did you tell Snape that we haven't covered them yet? He says Professor Snape, of course. But Lupin knows that Snape is being petty. Lupin knows that Snape hates him and he is very upset that he's teaching here. He's very upset that Lupin has Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher position and Snape doesn't. He knows that Snape hates having to make him the Wolfsbane every month. So Lupin knows that Snape has hatred and resentment towards him for present day and for in the past when they were Hogwarts students because of who Lupin's friends were. So, like, Lupin just knows Snape is being petty and he knows exactly what Snape is doing by teaching the students randomly about werewolves. Because Lupin is a werewolf and, you know, Snape can't just outright be like, hey, your teacher is a werewolf. Snape is doing it whatever he can to make him feel like has the upper hand in some way. Like, he has some sort of advantage or he's doing this on purpose. Snape is very much doing this on purpose. And Lupin knows and recognizes that. So he's kind of like, okay, like, I just have to deal with this now. So after he asked the class, did you tell Professor Snape that we haven't covered werewolves yet? The class, of course, this loud explosion of everything breaks out again. And they tell him, yes, of course we told him, but he said that we were behind, which they are not. They're not behind in their studies. And they keep telling him that he just wouldn't listen. So Lupin's like, okay, don't worry. I won't speak to Professor Snape. You don't have to do the essay. Don't worry about it. And probably the only person who finished it was Hermione. She said, oh no, I've already finished it. And I'm sure that it was a great essay. And being the only one that finished it, since she's the only one who figured out that Lupin is a werewolf after Snape, you know, sent this essay, she did more research and started putting two and two together and she figured it out. But she's the only one who did. And they end up having a really great lesson. They're happy they don't have to deal with Snape in Defense Against the Dark Arts anymore. They're happy that they don't have to turn in this essay or do the essay. And they have a really fun, enjoyable lesson. But either way, Hermione, she did do the essay and she learned a lot of information about werewolves, which will come in handy throughout this year for her, or at least later in the school year. So the kids have a really good lesson. They have a hinky puck lesson. So they're these one-legged creatures and they look like they're made out of wisps of smoke. But it's like they're pretty frail and they're pretty harmless looking, but little wisps of smoke. That's what a hinky puck looks like, one-legged. And so Lupin kind of tells a little bit about them, that they lure travelers into bogs. So yes, they look harmless, but they have a lantern that like dangles from their hand. That's part of like their creatureness, their creature form, I guess you can say. And so they lure travelers into bogs with the lantern. The light lures the travelers and people follow the light. And then, you know, And I should mention, they aren't these hunky punks, since they are, like, you know, this is Defense Against the Dark Arts. It's dangerous creatures. They aren't just out and about walking through the class. They are, like, in a glass case enclosure type thing, I should say. But I do think that these sound cool. Just the little wisps of smoke type looking creatures. I think that they sound really cool. And I can imagine them, like, they're probably gray, because wisps of smoke are, like, gray, white, you know, like the color of ash. But I think they'd be really cute if they were, like, different colors. I think that would be really cool looking. So that's kind of how I imagine them. It's like a little headcanon thing. Just how hippogriffs are all different colors. They can be different colors. That's how I imagine hinky punks might be. Just a little headcanon. And this is a very cool, like, creature heavy book. I mean, dementors, werewolves, hippogriffs, hinky punks, red caps, kappas, grindelows. Also, if you think about it, we have Defense Against the Dark Arts, where it's all those creatures you're being introduced to. Then you have Care of Magical Creatures, where you're being introduced to, such as the hippogriffs, like Buckbeak, and also flower worms. And also you have the Monster Book of Monsters. It's creature-heavy book. And think about the anime guy. Of course, you have the Marauders, who Lupin is not an animagus. He's a werewolf. That's another creature. But you have Scabbers. That's a rat. That's a creature. Sirius as a dog. That's a creature. Harry's Das Patronus is a stag, you know? And he turns into a stag. That's his animagus form. It's also his Patronus. But I think it's cool because it's just creature, themes of creatures. There are a lot of recurring themes in this book, and the creatures is definitely one of them. And it's just, you get a few examples every now and then, so it's pretty cool. So after the lesson ends, the bell rings, everyone leaves, except for Harry, because Lupin asks him to stay behind. He wants a word with him. And he says that he heard about the match and that he's very sorry about his broomstick, and asks if there's any chance of fixing it. And Harry says no, because the tree smashed it to bits. And here, I did talk about last episode where the Whomping Willow was planted the year that Lupin came to Hogwarts, because Dumbledore planted it there so that when Lupin would undergo his werewolf transformations, he could go into the Whomping Willow. Like, there's a tunnel at the base of the trunk of the Whomping Willow of the tree where you can go in and he would do his transformations. It would lead him to the Shrieking Shack. So that's why it was planted. So a little kind of a hint Easter egg there on why the Whomping Willow was planted the same year I arrived at Hogwarts. You know, that's a little hint there. And Lupin tells him that people used to play a game, and they would try to get near enough to the trunk, see who could get closest to the trunk. And in the end, a boy called Davy Gudgeon almost lost an eye. And after that, they were forbidden to go near it, because the Whomping Willow is dangerous. It almost killed Harry and Ron the year before. And it did full-on destroy Harry's broomstick. So it is a dangerous, very violent tree. And so, like I said last episode, that if people like this, I literally mentioned how this guy almost lost his eye. So, and I said, like, a broomstick is not going to have a chance. And that is what Lupin says, like, no broomstick would have a chance against that tree. And Harry, he has a difficult time asking Lupin, but he says, did you also hear about the Dementors? And Lupin's like, yep, I did. I don't think any of us have seen Dumbledore that angry. And he's saying that they have grown restless for some time. The Dementors are very angry that Dumbledore hasn't let them onto the grounds. And Lupin figures that's why Harry fell off his broom. And Harry says yes. And he wants to ask him why. And he hesitates, but then all of a sudden, it just bursts from him before he can even stop himself. He asks why. Why do they affect me like that? Am I just... And he's about to say weak. And Lupin cuts him off and says that it has nothing to do with weakness. And he explains why the Dementors affect him like this, and no one else is affected by them that way. And this is what I have been saying for a few chapters, because I, you know, that's what I do on this podcast. I explain it all like that. But basically, Lupin tells him nothing to do with weakness. The Dementors affect him worse because compared to everybody else, he has had horrors in his past that the others don't have. The other students and people there at Hogwarts have not had those same horrors that Harry has experienced. And Lupin goes on to say that Dementors are the foulest creatures that walk this earth, among the foulest creatures, and they infest the darkest, filthiest places. They glory in decay and despair. They drain peace, hope, and happiness out of the air around them. And muggles can feel their presence too, they just can't see them. And anybody gets too near a dementor, every good feeling, every happy memory will be sucked out of you. And if it can, the dementor, if it's given the chance, it will feed on them, on a person, long enough to reduce them to something like itself, like a dementor, soulless and evil. And you'll be left with nothing but the worst experiences of your life. And Harry's saying, since Harry has had the absolute worst happen to him, that's enough to make anybody faint, anybody to fall off a broomstick. Harry's just unfortunate enough to have gone through such horrors that the dementors want to feed on him like that. So Lupin says, you have nothing to be ashamed of, Harry. You have nothing to be ashamed of. And I do want to mention here, since Lupin did say that a dementor, if they feed on you long enough to reduce you to something like itself, soulless and evil, that is called the Dementor's Kiss. And that's a sentence that some wizards think is worse than death, because you're not technically, once a dementor does a Dementor's Kiss, like it just reduces you to like nothing. It sucks out your soul. It leaves you without a soul. You don't have mind. You're not alive, and you're not dead. You are just soulless. And it is the worst sentence. It's one of the worst sentences ever. Like it's worse than death, and the opinion of many think that it's just awful. And this is actually the sentence that is given to Sirius Black at the end of this book. He gets sentenced to the Dementor's Kiss. Harry and Hermione end up saving him when they go back in time. That's, you know, a story for later on in this book. But basically, that is what Sirius Black is sentenced to. In the fourth book, in the book after this, in Goblet of Fire, Barty Crouch Jr., who was actually the first person to escape Azkaban, people just didn't know. It's not Sirius, it was Barty Crouch Jr. is the first to escape. But he actually does get the Dementor's Kiss. Cornelius Fudge, the Minister of Magic, is a terrible leader, and he orders the Dementors to perform the Dementor's Kiss on Barty Crouch Jr., and Dumbledore gets furious at him for that because they could have gotten more information out of him. But because he was given a Dementor's Kiss, he has no soul, he can't speak, he can't do anything. I guess he's just like a body. I really hope that in the movie, or not the movie series, the television series of Harry Potter that's coming in a few years. Goblet of Fire, gosh, we won't get to that season, and that's the fourth season. It'll take years after that for it to premiere, like maybe 10, 12 years from now, if we're lucky. Like, it'll be a long time. But I would love to see the portrayal of what a person, a body, without their soul, who had the Dementor's Kiss performed on them, kind of what that looks like. Can they walk? Can they wander? Are they floating? Are they laying down? Like, I want to know what that looks like. I have my own in my head what I think, but we don't have enough from the books to really, I guess, give more of a visual on that. I know what happens to them. They don't have the soul. It's sucked out and everything. They're reduced to nothing almost, but I want to know like a little more visuals, kind of how that's supposed to look. So Harry, he tells Lupin that when the Dementors get near him, he can hear Voldemort murdering his mom. And Lupin makes a motion, like a sudden motion with his arm where he's about to kind of grip Harry's shoulder in like a comforting, reassuring way, but he doesn't. And there's like a silence, and Harry's the next one to speak. He speaks again because Lupin doesn't say anything. And Harry doesn't know that this is also really hard for Lupin too. Lupin was best friends with James and Lily. Sirius and James for the Marauders group, they were the bestest best friends. Like, they were the closest one of the group. But Lupin was also in that group, and he was also very great friends with Lily and James. And Lily wasn't a Marauder, but he was really good friends with Lily. And so to know that Harry can hear his mom being murdered when the Dementors are near, and for Lupin to know Lily and to know what she was like when she was living. Harry has no idea what his mom was like, but Lupin does. And to know that Harry can hear his friend, who is Harry's mom, dying every time the Dementors get near him, that's hard. And that's hard for Lupin. And he can't even imagine how it is for Harry to hear that, to hear those screams and Voldemort laughing and all that. So after, you know, a moment's silence, Harry decides to ask Lupin, why do they have to come to the match? And Lupin says it's because they're getting hungry and Dumbledore won't let them into the school. So they haven't had a lot of human prey to feed on. They haven't had humans to prey on because they're not in Azkaban where all the prisoners are, where they can, you know, feed on those humans. So once the large crowd gathered at the Quidditch field, they couldn't resist that. There was a lot of excitement. It was their idea of a feast. Like, yeah. And Harry thinks, like, okay, that means that Azkaban must be terrible. And Lupin's like, oh, yeah, like, never been there. But, of course, like, it's, he just describes it as this terrible place. He says that it's a fortress on a tiny island way out in the sea, but they don't need walls and water to keep the prisoners in. I mean, they do have that. But the prisoners are so trapped inside their own heads. They're incapable of a single cheerful thought, and most of them go mad within weeks. Within weeks. Like, they are just driven absolutely mad. So it has an effect on everybody. Like, Hagrid, who had to go there twice for a bit, it was terrible for him. It was awful. He described it as, like, the worst place ever. Sirius Black, people already thought he was mad, and he was obviously sane enough to escape Azkaban. But the reason that Sirius didn't go completely mad in Azkaban, and he tells Harry at the end of the book, is because he knew he was innocent. He was the only one in the world who knew he was innocent besides Peter Pettigrew, who he thought was dead, but he's not. He's Scabbers. And Sirius thought that, or Sirius knew that he was innocent, and that's what he thinks is the only reason that he wasn't driven completely insane by the Dementors for being in there for 12 years and for being a high security prisoner. Same thing with Hagrid. Hagrid knew he was innocent. Hagrid knew he didn't open the Chamber of Secrets, and that's probably what saved Hagrid and helped him, apart from the fact that Hagrid is half giant and it would take more Dementors and more intensity and quantity and everything and quality of the Dementors to feed on Hagrid. That's part of the reason he wasn't completely driven insane, because he was innocent and because he was half giant. But still, it could have driven him to insanity and made him mad. That's how intense Azkaban is. Like, it is no joke at all. It's bad. So as Lupin's describing Azkaban and saying that the prisoners are incapable of any cheerful thoughts at all, they usually go mad within weeks, Harry says, but Sirius Black escaped from them. He somehow got away. And Lupin says, yes, he must have found a way to fight them. I wouldn't have believed it possible, because he says Dementors are supposed to drain a wizard of his powers if he is left with them too long. So Sirius isn't technically supposed to have magical power anymore. That's what that sentence is telling me. The Dementors will do that to you because he was in there for so long and he was such a high security prisoner. But also, it's like, there's other Death Eaters who were in Azkaban for, like, as long as Sirius was. So, I mean, and they still have powers. So, and they were all high security. I mean, so I don't really know what that means by that sentence. Like, they all still have magic. They're all capable of still doing spells and everything. So I don't really think it's meant to say that, like, he doesn't have his, like, magic. If, like, he were given a wand, he wouldn't be able to do it. When he says powers, like, I'm thinking more of Animagi, his Animagus form. You don't need your wands. I mean, you need to be a wizard, obviously, to be able to be an Animagus. But you don't need your wand pointed at you to do a spell. There's just the way you can do it in your mind, like, to turn into your Animagus form. So, I mean, I think that's more what Lupin's, like, saying. He's kind of thinking out loud that Dementors are supposed to drain a wizard of their powers. But they didn't drain Sirius of his powers because he escaped. And Lupin is the only one alive besides Peter Pettigrew, aka Scabbers. He's the only one who knows about the illegal anime guy, like Sirius and James and Peter. They're all illegal anime guy. Sirius being an animagus, I'm 99.9% sure that Lupin knows exactly how Sirius escaped. He knows Sirius is an animagus, and he knows that Sirius must have escaped by turning into his animagus form, by being in his dog form and somehow escaping. And that's exactly how Sirius escaped. And this also causes Lupin a lot of guilt throughout the year. And he voices that guilt at the end of this book, saying that, like, so many times I felt I should have told Dumbledore, because I know that Sirius is an animagus and I suspected that's how he escaped. And he doesn't, and he feels bad because Dumbledore gave him a job when no one else would. So he feels terrible. He feels very guilty throughout his whole life, and this is one of the times this year where it just eats him away. Also, something I just thought of, and I don't know if I've thought of, I haven't thought about this in a few years, but I just thought of it. I bet, like, Peter Scabbers in his Scabbers form, he has to be hiding every single class. Like, the teachers see pets, you know, all their pets and the students, like, whether it's in the Great Hall or just walking around or whatever, they'll see the pets. And I really wonder, I bet that, like, as soon as they were on the train and Scabbers was in Ron's pocket and he heard, oh, Professor Lupin, like, they read Lupin, Remus Lupin on the suitcase, you already know that Scabbers, like, Peter Pettigrew in Scabbers form was like, I cannot come out at all this year. I need to stay in the common room. I cannot leave the common room. I cannot risk Lupin seeing me. Because you already know Lupin, that would have given Lupin the idea, like, wait a second, something's not right here. This guy is supposed to be dead. So it's, oh gosh, this book, I can't even imagine how the author came up with all of this information. Like, coming up with this backstory is insane. But I do digress. So back to the Dementors. So Harry tells Lupin, you made that Dementor on the train back off. And Lupin says there are certain defenses against the Dementor, but that was only one on the train. That was one Dementor. Multiple Dementors are definitely harder to fight off. And so he tells Harry, I'm not an expert at fighting Dementors, Harry. But Harry's like, I need to be able to defend myself. I need to be able to fight them. If they come to another Quidditch match, I can't just faint and fall off my broom again. So Lupin agrees, okay, I'll try and help. I'll teach you what I can, what I know about the Patronus Charm and everything. He doesn't tell him that it's the Patronus Charm he's going to teach him, but that is what he's going to instruct Harry on how to do. And he tells him, but we'll wait till after the holidays, wait till after the new year, because he has a lot to do before the holidays, and he chose a very inconvenient time to fall ill. Of course, his werewolf transformation was getting to him. So that's why he is going to wait till after the holidays. But that honestly makes Harry, like, he feels okay about that. He's like, hey, that's the promise of anti-dementor lessons from Lupin. Maybe I'll never have to hear my mother's death again. And that's what Harry wants. He doesn't want to keep hearing that and falling apart when the Dementors arrive. So Harry is looking forward to these anti-dementor lessons. Something else that happened that is uplifting Harry's spirits is the fact that Hufflepuff lost to Ravenclaw in their Quidditch game. So they actually flattened them. That's how bad they lost to Ravenclaw, which is good. That's very good, because that is what they need. That's what Gryffindor needs. They needed a certain outcome to happen in order to give them a chance to still win. And this is one of the things they needed. They needed Hufflepuff to lose to Ravenclaw. So all they need to do is beat Ravenclaw. And a few more things can happen with Slytherin too. But if they beat Ravenclaw and Ravenclaw beat Hufflepuff, like, that's going to be a better outcome for them. And you know who's feeling very happy about that is Oliver Wood. However, they cannot afford to lose another match. So he's still very, like, his energy is described as manic. He's been repossessed of his manic energy, because they all know that they cannot lose another match. And December happens. They still have bad weather, but nothing like that match that happened where Harry fainted, and they're still practicing and everything. However, Harry has to practice on one of the school brooms because his Nimbus 2000 was destroyed. But also something here about Oliver, it's like, why didn't you keep this energy throughout your team's lows? Like, seriously, what would have happened if Ravenclaw didn't beat Hufflepuff and Hufflepuff would have won? Then your chances would be gone to win the Quidditch Cup. But seriously, like, if that would have happened, would you still have stayed mopey and all down on your team instead of trying to finish out the Quidditch season strong? You know what I mean? Like, he's still being mopey, and it's like, you're still not being a good captain. Like, you need to keep that same energy the whole time and still be motivated to do the best that you guys can and win despite what other teams do. So, I don't know. Oliver is still kind of annoying me. But another good thing that happens is that Harry has not seen any more Dementors for the rest of November and all throughout December, which is good. That means they're, you know, Dumbledore's anger seemed to work. They're not, they're staying at their entrances, at the stations, at their entrances outside of the castle, outside of the grounds where they're supposed to stay. And then since it's December, it's Christmas time and they have the Christmas decoration description, which I love reading. So it's 2 weeks before the end of term, the sky lightens suddenly to a dazzling opaline white, and the muddy grounds were revealed one morning covered in glittering frost. Inside the castle, there was a buzz of Christmas in the air. Professor Flitwick had already decorated his classroom with shimmering lights that turned out to be real, fluttering fairies. The students are all happily discussing their plans for the holidays. So Ron and Hermione are saying that they are staying at Hogwarts throughout the holidays. And Ron says it's because you can't stand 2 weeks with Percy. Ron, you grew up with Percy. He's always been there for you, like, not for you, but, like, been there in your home growing up since he's your older brother. You can't stand 2 weeks with him. Like, you've already been at Hogwarts with him. He's already been here at school, like, Ron, you know. So he's not fooling Harry with that excuse. And Hermione says that she needs to use the library. Like, she's insisting she needs to stay at school for those 2 weeks to use the library. But Harry, they're not fooling him. Harry's not fooled. He knows that they're only doing it to keep him company, and he's very grateful for that. He's very appreciative of his friends for doing that. That's another thing. Like, the trio, I love their friendship, and this is such a great thing. And Ron and Hermione are like, you know what? We're not going to leave Harry here. We're going to stay here with him and keep him company. He's been going through it, and we want to be here for him, with him, and they know they'll have a great time at Hogwarts, and Ron gets a break from being at home around Percy, and that's great. And Hermione has a bunch of classes she's taking. She's got to go back in time and do all her classes. So, you know what? It doesn't hurt that Ron's away from his brother here at school. And it doesn't hurt Hermione that she is using this time to kind of do some more homework and research and studying that she has to do for her millions of classes. So they're not fooling Harry, but he is grateful, and it's still benefiting Ron and Hermione nonetheless. Something about Percy, too, that I just find interesting is that Percy, last year when he was prefect, he felt that it was his duty last year to stay at Hogwarts during Christmas time because the heir of Slytherin was roaming around, and he thought it was his prefect duty to, you know, tell people what to do and be bossy, right? But now he's head boy. He's not just a prefect, he's head boy. There's tons of prefects at Hogwarts. There's only one head boy. And now he's head boy this year. It's his last year at Hogwarts. And he doesn't feel the need to stay with, you know, probably because Sirius was around in the Dementors. Like, he's like, yep, I don't need to be here. Like, I'll be fine. You guys got it. Like, I'll just go home. I just think it's funny. That's just how Percy is. Since there's only 2 weeks left of school, the last weekend is approaching, the last weekend of term. And there's going to be another Hogsmeade trip on that last weekend of term. And everyone is excited except for Harry, because remember, he can't go. Hermione is exciting because she wants to do all of her Christmas shopping there. She wants to go to Honeydukes, the sweet shop. They want to go back there again because she wants to get her mom and dad tooth flossing string mints. It's these candies from Honeydukes. Her parents are muggles, of course, and they're dentists. That's their occupation. So she wants to get presents there, and that's one of the things she wants to get for her parents. So Harry knows he's not going to be able to go again. The only third year not going to Hogsmeade again. So he decides to just read. He borrowed a book called Witch Broomstick from Oliver, and it just basically gives information about different makes and models of brooms. Since he no longer has one of his own, he has been riding a broom called the Shooting Star. It's just a super old broom that belongs to the school. The school has, you know, different brooms, and the Shooting Star is the one he's using, and it's slow and jerky, and he definitely needs a new broom of his own. So he's just reading some information about the different makes and models available. And then it's Saturday morning, and it's the Hogsmeade trip, and Harry says bye to Ron and Hermione, and he heads back into the castle to go up towards Gryffindor Tower and do his reading. But then he hears someone saying, "Psst, Harry," like trying to get his attention, and it ends up being the twins. He's on the third floor corridor, and the twins are standing behind a statue of a one-eyed witch. That's one of the entrances, secret passages, I guess I should say, like for Hogwarts. So Harry asks, like, what are you doing? How come you're not going to Hogsmeade? And I just have to say, I absolutely love this exchange in the movie. It's one of my favorite parts of the whole series. Like, oh gosh, it's so good. I'll have to play the clip. But basically, the twins tell him, oh, we're here to give you some festive cheer before we go to Hogsmeade, with, like, a wink, you know? So they go into an empty classroom that's next to the one-eyed witch statue. Harry follows them inside, and, you know, they close the door because they don't need anybody hearing this. And they say they have an early Christmas present for him. And Fred takes out of his cloak a large, square, very worn piece of parchment with nothing written on it. So Harry just looks at it, and he's like, okay, this is a joke. This is one of the twins' ideas of, like, a little joke or a prank. However, George says that it's a secret of their success. And I'm not going to say every cool line that they say in the book, because I will play the clip. But basically, their twins are telling him, like, we're giving it to you. We don't need it anymore. And Harry's like, why would I want an old parchment, like an old bit of parchment? And Fred is like, this part I will say, because he closes his eyes with a grimace as though Harry had mortally offended him. And he tells George to explain. So basically, the twins, when they were in their first year, they set off a dung bomb in the corridor, and it upset Filch. So he called them into his office. And once they got in there, like, he was threatening detention and disembowelment and all of this stuff. So they couldn't help noticing, though, once they were in his office, there was a filing cabinet, and one of them was labeled confiscated and highly dangerous. So Harry is very amused now. He says, don't tell me. And they're like, well, what would you have done? You know, George caused a diversion by dropping another dung bomb, and he opened the drawer and grabbed what he saw, and it was the map. So basically, George is saying, I don't think Filch ever learned how to work it. He probably suspected that it was something slightly dangerous or whatever, otherwise he wouldn't have confiscated it. And, you know, they figured out how to work it. And Fred is saying that this map has taught them more than anything any teachers have taught them. But the twins show Harry how to use it. And basically, you touch the parchment with your wand. You just tap it and say, I solemnly swear I'm up to no good. And right away, like, thin ink lines spread out like a little spider's web, and they crisscross. And there's, like, a pattern and all these big fancy words. And it says, Messrs. Mooney, Wormtail, Padfoot, and Prongs, purveyors of aids to magical mischief makers, are proud to present the Marauder's Map. And it's a map of Hogwarts. It shows every detail of the whole castle and the grounds. And it has tiny ink dots moving around it, labeled with names. And you can see, like, Harry is astounded. He sees Dumbledore's name, and he sees that his little dot is, like, pacing in his study, in his office. He can see Mrs. Norris, Filch's cat. He sees Peeves, the little dot of Peeves. It's a lot. Like, it's pretty cool. And you can also see that there's a set of passages he's never known about before. There's seven. Remember, seven is a magical number. So they all lead into Hogsmeade. Filch knows about four. Fred tells him that Filch knows about four. But they show Harry on the map the three that Filch doesn't know about. However, one of them is completely caved in. It's behind a mirror on the fourth floor. So they're saying, like, don't even bother to use that one. But he's saying that there is one behind the Whomping Willow. It's kind of planted over the Whomping Willow entrance, so they're like, we wouldn't use that one. But this one leads right into the cellar of Honeydukes, and they said that they've used it loads of times, like all the time. And they're saying that it's right outside this room by the statue we were just by. It's that one-eyed witch. And so George says that they owe Mooney, Wormtail, Padfoot, and Prong so much. Mooney is Lupin's nickname. Wormtail is Peter Pettigrew's nickname as Scabbers. Padfoot is Sirius's nickname. That's his animagus form, the dog, the black dog Harry keeps seeing. And Prongs is like horns on an animal, like a deer on a stag. That is the animal that Harry's dad, James, turns into. That's his animagus form. So that is who Mooney, Wormtail, Padfoot, and Prongs are. Fred and George owe them so much because of this map. And that's another thing too, like in the movies, if you had only watched the movies, and you never read the books, like, you're not going to know who the Marauders are. They do not explain whatsoever in the movies at all. So it's, you know, if you didn't know that, now you do. But that is who the Marauders are. It's Sirius Black, Remus Lupin, James Potter, and Peter Pettigrew. And Fred thinks that they're just so noble because they pave the way for a new generation of these rule breakers. And then they tell Harry that you have to wipe it so no one can read it. So basically you just tap the map with your wand and say mischief managed and it'll go blank. So Fred, I think it's so funny, he gives a really great impersonation. Like, it's almost unsettling how good of an impersonation of Percy he does. But, you know, they are brothers after all. He says, "So young Harry, mind you, behave yourself." So they're winking at him and they go through their little passage and they tell him, "We'll see you in Honeydukes." And this is just, oh my gosh, I love the Marauder's Map because it's just, I've always loved Prisoner of Azkaban, and the Marauder's Map has always been something that I think is just so cool. It is also a source of what some fans think is a lot of inconsistencies throughout the series. You know, the Marauder's Map is one of the biggest ones, and I'll get into that later throughout this series, like throughout these episodes for the Prisoner of Azkaban. But I do want to talk a little bit about the map. So the Marauders, you know, Harry's dad, Sirius, Peter, and Lupin, they all made the map because they were good at magic. Like, Peter was the stupidest out of all of them, but Remus, Sirius, and James, they were all very good at magic. And so they're basically the main ones that did create the map. And they did it because once they became Animagi and they were exploring the Hogwarts grounds and everything, and they were hiding under James' invisibility cloak. Remember, Harry's cloak belonged to his dad. They created the map so they could, you know, see where they were going and know the grounds they were walking on and everything. And they enchanted it so that you had to say certain words to activate it, and you had to say certain words to clear the map so other people couldn't read it and everything. And during their years, at some point, Filch confiscated it, which must have been like a real hard blow for them. Must have been really hard. But also to be Hogwarts age and capable of magic to create a map like this, like, they were good. They were really good at magic. And it also has the homunculus charm on it. That's what keeps track of everyone at Hogwarts. And that's how you can see the dots of the names of everyone moving around and everything. And it also has a repelling spell that was directed at Snape. And that does come up in a few chapters. We'll see how that spell directed at Snape works. And it's just so cool. The map never lies, according to Lupin. Like, Lupin sees this map in a few chapters for the first time in years. And it probably brings back so many good memories, but also a lot of pain, you know, for him too. I'll get into that later. But the map never lies. That's what Lupin says. And it does give the true identity of the person, whether they are disguised as an Animagus, whether they're hiding underneath an invisibility cloak, or if they have Polyjuice Potion, it will give the true name of somebody. And that is why when Barty Crouch Jr. in the fourth book, he takes Polyjuice Potion and turned into Mad-Eye Moody, or, you know, a version of him with the Polyjuice Potion, it is a reason why Harry sees the name Bartemius Crouch on the map. That's Barty Crouch Jr.'s real name. And there's a senior, but it doesn't say junior or senior. However, Harry does see the name Barty Crouch on there, Bartemius Crouch. So it's, the map does not lie. That map is very accurate. So the map is super, super cool. And I just love that the twins did this for Harry. They knew that he wanted to go to Hogsmeade. They're like, "We've already memorized this map." They got it in their first year, and the twins are now in their fifth year. Like, they've had all these years to look at the map and memorize it and study it and know all about it. So they don't need it anymore. And they're like, "You know what, Harry? We think that your need is greater than ours."
"What are you doing? Shh. What's this rubbish?"
"What's this rubbish?" he says. "That there is the secret to our success. It's a wrench given to you, believe me. But we've decided your needs are greater than ours. George, if you will."
"I solemnly swear that I am up to no good."
"Mrs. Mooney, Wormtail, Padfoot and Prongs are proud to present the Marauder's Map."
"We owe so much."
"Hang on. This is Hogwarts. And that
Dumbledore. In his stunning pacing, does that a lot.
So you mean this map shows...
Everyone.
Everyone?
Everyone. Where they are, what they're doing, every minute of every day.
Brilliant. Where'd you get it?
Nicked it from Filch's office, of course. First year. Now listen, there are 7 secret passageways out of the castle. We'd recommend this one.
The one-eyed witch passageway. It'll lead you straight to Honeydew's cellar.
But you best hurry. Filch is heading this way. Oh, and Harry, don't forget, when you're done, just give it a tap and say, mischief managed. Otherwise anyone can read it.
I just had to play that clip because I love that scene in the movie and the line delivery. It's so good. I love the way they did that. So Harry is very amused by the twins. He thinks that this is pretty cool. And he has some reservations though, because he's super excited, but then he remembers something he heard Mr. Weasley say last year. He remembers Mr. Weasley said, "Never trust anything that can think for itself if you can't see where it keeps its brain." And this is when, at the end of Chamber of Secrets, where, you know, the diary and Mr. Weasley tells Jenny, "What have I told you about, you know, trusting anything that can think for itself?" So that is what Harry remembers, because he had the encounter with Tom Riddle's diary last year where he destroyed it as the Horcrux, but he does remember it. And that's kind of what he's thinking. Like, I can't see where this map keeps its brain, but he reasons that he's not using it for anything bad. He just wants to go to Hogsmeade, hang out there, and he's not going to steal anything or attack anyone. He just wants to chill with his friends. And Fred and George have been using it for years without anything horrible happening. So he decides that, like, it'll be okay. So he sneaks out. He goes, like, opens the door just a little bit so he can make sure no one's coming down the corridor. And very carefully, he goes behind the statue of the One-Eyed Witch. And he gets to it, and he's not sure what to do exactly. So he opens the map again, and he sees a new little dot, and it's his own name, Harry Potter. It's standing right where he is. And it's an ink figure, which I think is interesting. It's his little ink self. Looks like he's tapping his wand, like, on the witch statue. So he does the same thing. He takes his wand out and taps the statue, and nothing happens. But then there's a little speech bubble on the map, and it's Descendium. So that's what Harry whispers, tapping the stone, and it works. And the hump on the witch's back on the statue, it opens enough to let someone through. So Harry does it really quick, goes through the hole, and pushes himself forward. And I think it's cool. Like, in the movie, it's not all this detail. It is a detailed map in the movie, but it's not the little ink figures, and it's not the little speech bubble. So I think it's cool, but also, this is the Marauders, the magic they put into it because they were troublemakers and rule breakers. This is the magic they put into it that is telling Harry how to break the rules. Like, it's showing Harry, you tap your wand here. It's showing Harry, you say this. So this is the magic that they embedded into the map. So it's pretty cool. And so he slides down. It feels like he's sliding down like this stone slide. And then he's going through, like, a very dark passage. It is pitch black. So he does Lumos, of course. And he also mischief manages the map right now. And it goes blank. So he folds it and goes, you know, through the passage. And it twists and it turns. And it gets big and it gets smaller. It's very uneven floor. And it takes forever. It feels like an hour. After what feels like an hour, he finally feels the passage rise up a little bit. And it's so funny because it feels like it's taking ages, but Harry is using the thought of Honeydukes to motivate him. That is what is driving him forward as it's taking forever to get through this passage. And I just think, same, Harry, honestly, I would be using the motivation of Honeydukes to get through as well. And he's trying to be very careful. He doesn't want to make noise. He's climbing the steps. And apparently it's like 200 steps. Because I don't know if that's what it feels like to Harry or if that's an accurate description of how many steps he has to get to or has to climb up. And eventually his head hits something hard and it seems like it's a trap door. So Harry's listening to make sure he doesn't hear anybody on the other side of it. And he pushes it open and he sees that he is in the cellar. And it's full of wooden crates and boxes, like all the merchandise, all the candy, of course. And he climbs out of the trap door and sets it back down and it blends in perfectly with the floor. Like, it's almost impossible to even know it's there. and he starts climbing a staircase, another staircase, now that he's in the cellar, that's leading like into the shop. And he can definitely hear voices now, and he keeps hearing a bell that's signaling like the opening and shutting of the front door of the shop. And so he's kind of wondering what he should do. So he hears somebody about to come downstairs. He hears a woman's voice saying, "Get another box of jelly slugs. They've cleaned us out." This is, of course, the Hogwarts students who have been buying all their merchandise, and the jelly slugs are definitely a fan favorite there amongst the Hogwarts students. Now Harry knows this is might be his only chance, so he kind of hides behind a crate as somebody comes downstairs into the cellar. And very quickly and silently, Harry comes out from under his hiding place, or from behind his hiding place, climbs the stairs, looks back and sees that there's somebody like buried behind a box, so this person never saw Harry or suspected anything. Harry reaches the door and slips out very stealthily, and he ends up being behind the counter of Honeydukes, and he just kind of ducks underneath it and then arrives like underneath the counter into the actual shop. And it is so crowded in there. Like, it's all Hogwarts students, and no one even looks twice at Harry. Like, they're not even shocked if they even notice it is Harry there. And he just kind of looks around and takes in his surroundings. And I think it's so funny because Harry, he does not think of Dudley much. He doesn't think of the Dursleys very often. But being in that shop, he just knows that Dudley would have loved to be in that shop, because Dudley loves food. He loves his candy and sweets and all that. And Dudley would be so jealous to know that Harry got to be in a place like this. So that is what Harry's thinking of. Like, he has to suppress a laugh because he can imagine what Dudley's face would look like if he could see where Harry was now. And I love the description of the shop. It's just shelves upon shelves of the most succulent-looking sweets imaginable. Creamy chunks of nougat, shimmering pink squares of coconut ice, fat, honey-colored toffees, hundreds of different kinds of chocolate in neat rows. There is a large barrel of every flavor beans, and another of fizzing Whisbies, the levitating sherbet balls that Ron had mentioned. Along yet another wall were special effects sweets. Drubal's best blowing gum, which filled a room with bluebell-colored bubbles that refused to pop for days. The strange splintery tooth-flossing string mints, those are the ones that Hermione mentioned she wanted to get for her parents. Tiny black pepper imps, and you could just breathe fire. That's like what the pepper imps cause you to do. Ice mice, they make you like make your teeth chatter and they cause you to squeak. Then there's peppermint creams shaped like toads, and they like actually hop around in your stomach as if a toad was there. And they have fragile sugar spun quills and exploding bonbons. Harry keeps squeezing through the crowds of the students, and it's like in the farthest corner of the shop, and it's under something like a sign that says unusual tastes, and Ron and Hermione are there. So they are shopping for Harry right now. Hermione is saying, Harry's behind them. They don't know he's there yet. He's sneaking up on them. But Hermione's saying that he's not going to want these. They're for vampires. And they are these like blood-flavored lollipops. And Ron's looking around and he's like, okay, well, how about these? And it's a jar of cockroach clusters. And Harry says, definitely not. I don't want those. And Ron almost drops the jar because, Harry's not supposed to be there. Hermione, of course, is concerned. She's like, what are you doing here, Harry? How did you even get here? And Ron is just saying, wow, you've learned to apparate. No, Ron, he has not. And that's just exactly what Ron's mind went to right away. Like, Ron, it takes weeks and weeks, sometimes months, for wizards to learn how to apparate. You know that, Ron. You have a family full of wizards. You're pure blood. All you've ever known is magic. Like, come on, Ron. You know that you can't just learn to apparate right away like that. Either way, he's very impressed. And Harry tells him, of course I haven't learned to apparate. And he very quietly and like discreetly tells them about the Marauder's map. And Ron is outraged. He cannot believe that the twins never gave it to him. He's like, I'm their brother. Why wouldn't they give it to me? He is just absolutely outraged. And Hermione is saying like, well, Harry's not going to keep it, of course. He's going to hand it in to McGonagall. Like, Hermione, come on. You know your friends. You know Harry and Ron. You know that he's not going to give that map to McGonagall. So Ron says like, are you mad? Why would you hand in something that good? And Harry's saying, like, even if I do hand it in, I'll have to say where I got it. And then Filch would know that the twins stole it. So, like, no, Hermione, I'm not going to turn it in. But Hermione's like, well, what about Sirius Black? He could be using one of those passages on that map to get into the castle. That's probably how he got in the first place. And she's saying the teachers have to know. And this isn't necessarily like Hermione wanting to follow the rules. She's being annoying to them right now because she wants Harry to turn it in. And it's not her being like, oh, I need to follow the rules. It's her being concerned for Harry's safety and her being frustrated that Harry and Ron are not taking Harry's safety seriously because Sirius Black is after him. So it's very much a concern for them. And I kind of get it from Hermione's point of view, but also Harry and Ron are 13-year-old boys. Like, they're gonna be, they're already troublemakers. You know, they're a little mischievous. They're not on the twins level. But, you know, they're going to use something like this to their advantage. And they're not going to give this to McGonagall or any teacher because it's just too good. They can totally use this for themselves. And Harry explains to Hermione what Fred and George told him about the 7 secret passages. Filch already knows about 4 of them, according to the twins. And one of them is caved in, so you can't get through it. One of them's to the Whomping Willow, and you can't get through that. You know, the Whomping Willow's too dangerous. And the one through the cellar is the one Harry just used. So that's really only one good entrance, you know, throughout all 7 secret ones. And he's saying that Sirius Black, unless he's sneaking through Honeydukes, you know. And Harry does hesitate for a second. He does say, he does think to himself, what if Sirius Black does know the passages there? But Ron distracts him because he clears his throat and points to a notice, like a sign that's pasted on the inside of the sweet shop door. And basically it's by order of the Ministry of Magic, and it says that customers are reminded that until further notice, Dementors will be patrolling the streets of Hogsmeade every night after sundown. This measure has been put in place for the safety of Hogsmeade residents and will be lifted upon the recapture of Sirius Black. It is therefore advisable that you complete your shopping well before nightfall. Merry Christmas. So Ron is saying, see, Hermione, like, I'd like to see Black try and break into Honeydukes when there's Dementors all over the village. And all, and anyways, he's saying, Hermione, like, the owners of Honeydukes would have known. They live over the shop. Like, they would hear stuff. They would know if there was a break-in. And Hermione, she's struggling to find another problem. She's really, like, looking for something, another excuse for Harry to not be here and to not use the secret passages and to turn that map into McGonagall. So the problem Hermione comes up with is that Harry didn't get his permission slip signed, and he's going to be in a lot of trouble if anybody sees him, if anybody finds out, because for one thing, he's not allowed to go because of his permission slip, it wasn't signed, and because Sirius Black was spotted in Hogsmeade and he was in Hogwarts. Like, come on. She's right. Harry is in danger. That's what they all think. So it makes sense that she's concerned, but they're being 13-year-old boys and they are glad that Harry is now in Hogsmeade, and, you know, she's disappointed in Ron and Harry right now, but they're being 13-year-old boys is what they're doing. They're being reckless little 13-year-old Gryffindor boys. That's exactly how they're acting right now. But Hermione's like, okay, what if Sirius Black turns up today, like right now? And Ron says, how could Sirius Black even spot Harry? Because it's just like, not a blizzard, but it's just a bunch of snow. And so he's telling Hermione, like, come on, Harry deserves a break. It's Christmas time. Like, you know, just relax. Hermione is looking extremely worried. Like, she is worried for Harry's safety. That's what it is. It's not because she wants to be a know-it-all, goody-two-shoes, not rule breaker. It's because she's worried for Harry's safety. But Harry knows her, so he's like, are you gonna report me? And he's smiling at her like, I know you're not going to. And she's like, of course I'm not going to, Harry, but seriously, come on. So Ron changes the subject and he leads Harry over to a barrel and he's like, look at these. And he shows him the fizzing Whisbies, the jelly slugs, the acid pops, like all the candies that they had kind of told him about. And one thing he didn't tell him about, though, was acid pop incident. Fred gave Ron an acid pop when he was 7 and it burnt a hole right through his tongue. Remember, these are magic candies and sweets, so they do crazy things. And he says that he remembers that their mom was hitting him with the broomstick, like he was so mad. So he looks at the acid pop and he has a look on his face. So he's probably remembering that traumatic incident where the acid pop burnt a hole into his tongue. So he's wondering, I wonder if Fred will take these cockroach clusters if I tell him they're peanuts. And, you know, Fred probably knows they would be. But they all pay for their sweets and then they leave Honeydukes for the blizzard outside. So I do want to talk a little bit, a few things. So I wonder, like, Harry, could you have gone up to your room, grabbed the cloak and a jacket so you weren't so freezing, like grabbed an adequate jacket or sweater or whatever and your invisibility cloak so that you could go into Honeydukes, like go to Hogsmeade undetected and have a little more security? Yes, he should have done that. But also, I mean, he was already there. He had his wand. He was at the, he was right near the statue where the secret passage was. And he felt like he just had to go quickly. So, I mean, I kind of get it, but maybe you should have gone to get the invisibility cloak before. But Harry doesn't always think everything through. So, you know, here we are, Harry and Hogsmeade, cold and no invisibility cloak. So I want to know a few things. You guys can totally email me, and I love hearing responses from you guys. And I know I would be very nosy with the Marauder's Map, especially like the first night I got it. I would want to know what everyone's up to, looking at every corner of Hogwarts. I would want to know. I'd be very curious. So I wonder, like, if anybody else would be nosy too, or if there's like anyone in particular they'd be curious about watching, like Malfoy or Dumbledore, whatever it is, like who are you watching and what are you looking for? Like, I would be very curious to know. Another thing I would love to know is the sweets, the Honeyduke sweets, because I love candy and the descriptions of these candies are so cool. So we had like the creamy chunks of nougat, shimmering pink squares of coconut ice, these big honey color toffees, hundreds of different kinds of chocolate, like all the chocolate you can think of, different combinations of it, every flavor beans, fizzing Wisbees. I think the thing I would be most excited to try is the fizzing Wisbees. They're the sherbet balls that make you levitate, and I just love sherbet. I think it would be so fun and cool to levitate and have the treat. So I think that would be what I would most like to try. And the hundreds of different kinds of chocolate. Like, I love chocolate. Not all kinds, but I do really love milk chocolates. I would love to see, like, what combinations they have there. There's just so many. I don't think, like, I don't like coconut, so the coconut ice I wouldn't want, and, like, the blood lollipops, probably not, acid pops. You know, there are some things I wouldn't, but it would be fun to sample just different things there. I think that would be so fun, and that's one of the places I would most be looking forward to visiting in Hogsmeade. So let me know what kind of sweets you guys would like, what kind of catches your eye, and what sounds good to you and fun. And I'm going to finish this episode there. And this is going to be my first episode ever where I do a part two. So episode number 50 is a milestone. And also it's a first because it's the first time I'm splitting a chapter up into two episodes. And it's because the rest of this chapter, it's there's not a lot, like not like many pages, I guess. But my notes, I have a lot of notes because so much important stuff happens and it's a lot to explain. And I don't want to be doing like one super long episode for this chapter. So I am going to split it up into two parts. So next week's episode is still going to be chapter 10 because it's, gosh, there's so much explanation from the characters, from like stuff that's being told in this chapter and also explanation that I have to do. So I do want to do a second part for this episode just so it's not so long for one episode. And the second part is going to really detail some important stuff. Very, 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 very important stuff for the whole series in general. Like, some of these events that happen, it's insane. So next week's episode will still be covering chapter 10 of Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, which is the Marauder's Map. But just like the last bit of it, the last half or so. So I want to remind you, you can email me at theirsaslytherinpodcast@gmail.com. I'd love to know what you guys think about those candies and just different things in Hogsmeade and the Marauder's Map and everything. And I do love the Marauder's Map. I think it's just one of the coolest magical things ever, magical items. So this is a really fun chapter. And Fred and George are just great in this chapter and in the movie, this part as well. I love it so much. It's so cool. So yeah, you can email me at theirsaslytherinpodcast@gmail.com. Twitter is @SlytherinPod. Facebook page is theirsaslytherinpodcast. And you can listen to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Breaker, Radio Public, Anchor, and Pocket Casts. So yeah, just next week's episode is going to be the second half of Chapter 10 of Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, The Marauder's Map. Thank you for listening to The Heiress of Slytherin, a Harry Potter podcast. I'm Mika Ella, your host.